Hello, everyone. Guys, this stuff is awesome. I want to thank C60 Purple Power. I've been taking it for over a month. I feel amazing. My energy has increased. I have better sleep, focus, awareness, and I've lost so much weight. C60 may be the most powerful antioxidant yet known. Not only can it help maximize the efficiency of cells in producing energy, but it may also provide cellular protection against many toxic environmental factors. It also helps to reduce inflammation in the body by neutralizing oxidative free radicals. Take back control of your health right now and begin your C60 Purple Power journey today. Go to c60purplepower.com/knowledge10 and you get 10% off your order plus free shipping, or just click the link in the description. C60 Purple Power, man, I'm telling you, this stuff is great. Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, I want to welcome back to the show Harry Challenger. He is a field ufologist and contact reporter. In 1996, he joined ELUFON, a London-based UFO investigation group, and launched Down to Earth magazine as a London-based UFO magazine. In 2004, he took over the editorship of Flying Saucer Review, and in 2010, started the UFO Academy with Catherine O'Neill. Last year, he started AIM, Alien Interaction Media. Harry, welcome back, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, and it's my birthday today, as we said earlier, so it's a nice birthday treat to talk about something good.
Yes, that's awesome. Happy birthday. This is going to be an amazing birthday conversation. Last time you were on, you shared fascinating contact cases and the most amazing, compelling pictures that I've ever seen of ships and even beings. But tonight we're going to go even deeper into this and talk more about these entities, these beings themselves. What are they? The psychic phenomenon behind it. Where are they from? What do they want? And the best part, you have possible real pictures of these entities. I can't wait to get into this. So tell us, before we get started, just a little bit, it's been a while since you've been on. What got you started with the whole ufology, this whole field? Because you do some of the best research and you come up with the best evidence that I've ever seen for the phenomenon. So what just got you started down this path?
I'm a healthcare practitioner, so that's why I use the name Harry Challenger, not to confuse people. So Harry Challenger is my UFO research name. And I was using some natural medicine techniques with very much to do with meridians and human body energy and very intuitive stuff where you would do muscle testing and get into. And really what I was finding that I got psychically trained from about 92 through to 96. So when I became aware, I started to run into other things that happen that we don't notice. So I'd gone from someone who probably was aware but didn't know to, by 1996, I started to see orbs and lights. And the original orb I saw was in an infrared beam. So there's always clues. And I used to visit old ladies who were with a social worker type person. And it was voluntary. I used to go in and just cheer them up, have a chat with them. And it was kind of a morale boost. And when I was coming out, it used to be a light moving around inside a red beam of an infrared beam. And then the orbs started to become more independent. And then I started to see large spheres of light. And eventually they took on human forms. So my belief is that it's we have a huge latitude to our psychic ability. So most of us are seeing the world like that. And then when we develop, we see the spectrum. So like broadband. So I became aware of other entities, and I started to see, they became aware of me as I became aware of them, and then I started to see UFOs, which were very very clear UFOs. They weren't like anything, they were undeniably UFOs, let's use that phrase. And then I did see entities. So for me, my evolution, which is the important thing, is becoming aware without trying to impose any particular agenda. So a starting point would be to develop the subconscious, develop the psychic, and not try and steer it. Because it's very easy to become religious, or it's very easy to become a bit cultish. And what you're looking for is just to be an observer that's impartial and let things unfold. And that's what, it was still traumatic, because we live in a culture that says you don't see things. You don't see UFOs, you don't see entities. And luckily for me, I met some ufologists from London, and they became a MUFON. You know, they were a group of very ordinary Londoners, but they had the strength of character, which is typically British, which was they never ever capitulated to like following the herd. You know, so that's where I got to. So once I realized that UFOs were there, we had this group, we realized that research had to happen. And this London group were going out every weekend, sometimes weekdays, and meeting witnesses and doing field work. So that's from meeting them within a month or 6 weeks, I was going along and meeting people and hearing these ordinary working people from London asking other ordinary people from London about their encounters. And that's where like my beginning is about searching and researching. And then I got into crop circles as well. And I got into humanoid contact. So we became a contact group. So what you do with that is very, very important. It's probably the most important thing I can say in the whole talk. You put a group of experiences together, you like abductees, contactees, etc. You put them in a group of maybe five or six. You don't want to go too many because the waves change a bit and get too big. And we went out looking for contact, and we found it. And we found that entities would respond if you come with a kind of maturity. So there's, again, the agenda. So if you go in with an agenda to have a personality leading you, or to have some kind of new age ideas, that's imposing into what's happening. You just go there. You know the craft are there. You go to see them. You encounter them. And then you try and get closer and closer. And they're watching very closely. So that's my roots were pretty intense. So I was straight into humanoid contact really from 3 or 4 months in. And then I was into UFO vectoring, as they call it, later years. Probably 3 or 4 months in, we were already UFO vectoring and communication. And, you know, this is unfortunately not structured. So, you know, I'm coming here telling you about what I did in 1996, which is 24 years ago. There was very little structure. So you had to learn it yourself. And you met other UFO group people, you met other people, and they had to structure it because no one had really laid it out. And most people hit a blank. So what the normal response of an alien encounter is, you get one encounter, you get one UFO encounter, and it all stops. And then you chase around for a bit, give up, and disappear back into the public. And we didn't want that. So we wanted to continuously encounter. We wanted to develop relationships with other non-human intelligences. And maybe because we're different, we got close, and we kept repeating that and getting close. But there wasn't an open door. So that's the first thing. So to be close to the alien intelligence is not an, it's an open door, but you can't get in. That's what's weird. So it's there, but you have to evolve. And this is where I take a view about behaviorism and a bit of Darwin. So we're going to evolve into a new environment where these higher intelligences reside, where they move about, and we have to evolve into it. So again, we don't need an agenda. We just need to watch what works and follow the responses. So that's, and some of this is psychic, unfortunately. Some of this means that you have to listen in a way that is the attention of your whole being, which is the psychic dimension. So that's where I stand. So a bit of a complicated story, but really not that complicated. So
very good. Yes, good intro. So, you know, I know we're all excited to get into this. So let's go ahead and get started with some of the images you have and some of the information behind them. Because from what you were showing me earlier, man, this is going to be amazing.
Well, this is where we start from. Is Flying Saucer Review is started in 55. It took on the Flying Saucer Bureau's magazine, which was 1952, 53. So it has lineage that goes back to the very first time. And this humanoids word comes up. Now, this is 1966. Flying Saucer Review released this special report. And people can probably see that Cole Lorazen is there from APRO. There's Jacques Vallée. And then some big names in British ufology from FSR, Gordon Pryke and Charles Bowen. And from French ufology, Amy Michel, who was a TV producer, I think. They're obviously, you know, apart from Jacques Vallée, they're long gone. But the concept was reasoned, rational reports. People were picking them up from all over the world and then unifying them and trying to link them into some overall picture. That's where we're going with it. So this heritage we have in ufology is the case history, which at Flying Saucer Review is the journal that brought the case history. So you analyze the occasion, the encounter, the participants, you engage with the actual witnesses and produce a report. This doesn't exist as a science yet. So the case report formed itself. The people from this generation were all wartime people, most of them. And they had ways of identifying aircraft and identifying enemy troops and all this sort of stuff. So it's just an extension, I think, of the psyche that came post-war. I mean, Flying Saucer Review is 1955. It's only 10 years post-war. And the guy who first started it was Derek Dempster, who was a fighter pilot. And really, this identification, so you're looking at the entity, you're looking at the circumstances, and you're trying to create a sequence of reports that we can refer to. Now, that's never really come to pass as a discipline. So that's where we're starting. So I'm going to take you through what I think is humanoid evidence, and we're going to discuss it. So let's see if I can come out of this. I think I can. Yes, I can. Getting better at it now. And I came to I'll do this first because that follows what I was saying. I used to draw entities that I would have seen. So this was an entity I saw. I got very close to it. I drew it, and I tried to be, because I'm trained in anatomy and trained in, you know, appearance. I did a fair bit of art when I was young, so I know what I'm doing. You're looking at an entity, what it looks like, and that is the, you know, the starting point. What does it look like? What's its character? How does it behave? This is what case history evidence is. So when we study humanoids, we want to know what these creatures are. We start by drawing them. We're not going to have pictures at this stage. I drew these in 96. These are all memories from 96. Again, I understand skull bones. I understand the mandible, the cranium. And really, luckily for people, like someone who's anatomically trained, if someone sticks together a model, you can see that the anatomy doesn't flow. It's very much the proportions, how a body is. So when I drew these, I would see something and I'd quickly draw it afterwards to try and capture it. But it's not a perfect rendition, but it gives you a theme. It's like, right, that's what an entity looks like. So we can then go to, this final thing. This is just a psychological image for me. This is me on a pile of old stones on Dartmoor. And that's what we're looking at here is we're looking at all these different bits of case evidence, and we're trying to make them into an image of what's going on overall. And for me, you know, being on Dartmoor, you're looking at some of the ancient Neolithic sites that are there, and you're trying to make sense of what's there. And that's a physical, tangible thing. So we look at the ancient humans, the ancient Britons, how did they live? Something that interests me. Then we look at these alien creatures, and the first thing we have to look at is how do they get about? What is their nature? What's their technology do that allows them to move in? And, you know, I get into that sort of like that the whole case history should bring you into it. So maybe if I just start with a few, this is a very odd picture. This is a case from, I think, Washington State in about 2003 or 2004. This I talked to the witness. I knew the witness very well. This is a dimensional entity. Now, what this lady did, and this gets into how different and how Darwinian this is, She ran a webcam back in the early days of webcams on a slow update of every 4 or 5 seconds it would take an image. And she would get sequences of movement of entities that happened in much different time zones. So she was getting them on these slow update images. And this very strange figure, if you look at the length of his arms, you look at his haircut, you look at his leg. Now, she lived alone. So you're not going to have, you know, someone walking around your house when you live alone. You don't have someone, he's very illuminated. He's appearing during a flash of light. And she got this, and she got some very smoky beings that were like made out of just smoke.
And she did this because she was having ongoing experiences and contact.
She had an orb that spoke to her. Now, the strangest thing is she picked up a mirror from a skip, from a rubbish bin, basically. And it was probably 300 years old, this mirror. And it was probably somewhere from Europe it had come from. And it may well have been, I'm going to say it's somewhere, some sort of Jewish connection. I don't know why, but she had this mirror. When she got the mirror, and that's very strange, a light appeared and spoke to her, and it sort of greeted her, and then she started seeing entities. Now, what's the strangest thing about this case is that these are interdimensionals. They're not aliens. They're very much interdimensionals. They're not carrying UFO spacesuits or acting like aliens. They are visiting her house post getting the mirror. And she saw mythical creatures on film. So she's not mad because she's seen them on the webcam. And she saw something called a fawn, which is a mythical kind of creature that Pan takes the place. And she saw a Pan. And she, you know, so weird this case. Now, I lost touch with this lady. I still have her name and details. This lady was a paralegal. She worked in a very legitimate, normal job. And she's probably been more advanced now. She's probably much senior. She was filming entities crossing from dimensions into her home. And this gives you an idea of how odd these creatures are. I mean, anatomically, his leg or his limbs, he's a very strange creature. I think that's probably a drawer behind him. But his arms do not match any sort of human anatomy I've seen. So I think he's a very bizarre. His haircut is like the most weirdest haircut you can imagine. And you can make out anatomy.
It almost looks like a helmet of some sort.
It could be. But he's, you know, this is a starting point. We've got to look at, this is a new dimension or a new ecosystem. And when we're dealing with this, we can't go in and say, oh, we're going to apply the rules that we know here. And this is the big mistake skeptics do. And they are a disaster when they start. When you examine what a skeptic says, he says, with the dimensions and the physics of my reality, I'm going to explore another reality, and I'm going to impose what's possible in my reality in another reality. So, you know, I've got it in for skeptics on that. They don't know what science is for other realities. They only know this one. They know what we know about, and even then we're limited. We've got 300 years of science since Newton. What I think is happening is that there are other intersecting spaces which are almost like motorways for higher intelligences and other entities. There's not just one other dimension. We're probably networked. So when we're seeing things, this particular set of entities, some of them are like mythological characters. I mean, you literally had creatures like the fawn is what I believe that was. It was an entity taking the shape of something, and it was taking a mythological shape, which is a small deer, which was moving around, and she could see. It's so disturbing. The pan-like entity just sat and just blinked a bit and looked around. You know, it didn't do anything fantastic. But the fact
it seems like it interacts with your consciousness or state of mind that you're in.
But it appears on the film, so it's a real thing. That's what's disturbing. So, unfortunately, I didn't get her full set of films. Because early days of streaming, we couldn't get the data to stream. So all I've got is a few pictures. But at least I know what they are. And for me, they answer the question. This is a new dimension, a new domain. We do not bring our physics and say, well, it doesn't make sense, Chris. Because all the physics I've got says that doesn't exist. Because you can't impose your physics in there. And if you haven't got a concept of how other dimensions intersect ours, which we clearly don't have. You assume that your physics is the only physics around. That's the beginning and the end of, like, where the skeptic is. He believes that time is the same everywhere. He believes that the rules of gravity are the same. We haven't got a clue what happens in other dimensions. We haven't got a clue. But they're certain. They're absolutely certain that if it doesn't match up to what we know, it can't be real. So, and it's fine. And there's a phrase that this little guy, Amy Michelle, I think he said it. He was a great author. He said, "I didn't say it was possible. I said that it happened." And I think he used that quote in a debate once in France. As far as, I'm not sure if it was him, but it's a beautiful statement. "I didn't say it was possible. I said that it happened." And that, for me, defines what all this stuff's about. So, you know, I'm getting quite impassioned on that. But it's a dimensional being. And we're looking at him and we're trying to be, what's the word? We're trying to be explorers. And, you know, we're like trying to be the map makers of the next age. And we're trying to say, how the hell did he get there? What's his dimension like? What's time in his dimension? What does he know? What's his life like? What does he know about us? You know, none of these questions come from skeptics because they don't have to deal with it. They just say, doesn't match what I know, didn't happen. That's it, finished, next. That's it. We don't want that. So I'm getting animated again. But I'll go to a picture here, which means a lot to me. This was taken down a lane, and this is the kind of beings that I saw. And when people start photographing them, I get a sense of relief.
Wow, that's amazing. Look at that.
If you've seen the Cumberland Spaceman image from the early 70s or mid-60s, actually. No, it's Blue Streaks. About the mid-60s, there's a strange sort of posterior view of a sort of guy in a space helmet. And there's a strange thing hanging down his back that looks like a Walkman lead. And this lady has the same lead going down her back, which I find very interesting. You can see her hair, a bob of hair. You can see her arms. And, you know, this is the kind of what I would say I saw in 96. I saw these very blue neon people. And there was another reality. Again, I checked myself.
Now, what's the story behind this picture here?
It was that these are UFO contact sites. So when I started in 96, we realized that there's special places where crafts are viewable and entities visit. And if you go to those specific points, you're closer to the perimeter of whatever this other intersecting reality is. So this is going to one of those places, a lane, an empty lane, and the guy just took a picture and caught her. But these beings are viewable as well. So they do actually see real ones, and then they photograph ones they can't see. The images I don't have, and I don't know if they exist, are where people see what they're filming. I've got a set of images that tell me things have happened, but I won't be able to say, I'm trying to think of the right term. I was trying to say this to you earlier. These pictures are tools. I follow this Buddhist philosophy. Don't be distracted by magic or phenomenon. Don't be distracted. The universe is not about being proved to you by magic or by images. What we should be doing is journeying into ourselves and then getting into this reality, which I still say is a psychic link to our reality. It's psychic. It's like we are actually part of some sort of waveform or some sort of information field where what we think, plastic, it's kind of a plastic universe, in my opinion. It's kind of a popular opinion, especially in crop circles it was, that you manifest through your what you realize, the deepest realization, which is, as I go back to this picture here, this is an example, if I can go to this. This image was used on the website for the friendship case in Italy, and it represents meiotics, which is an ancient Greek idea of giving birth to knowledge. So you see the world in her hands. She's giving birth to a knowledge, very 2001, if you know the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey. You get this new seed, which is a new humanity. And for me, this is a very deep psychological and psychic image. Now, as I said to you earlier, the weirdest thing was I got to know this person before I ever saw this image. And it was a mystery person that I knew online and I used to talk to. And I actually knew that person. And then I found out she was the logo for the Friendship Case official website. It's just bizarre that she's not part of the Friendship Case. She's not even part of ufology. But it was very bizarre to meet her. I don't know who she was. As I always say, in these situations, you get these, this is the psychic domain. You run into things which are intriguing and very unusual.
Synchronicities.
You don't get, yeah, synchronicity. So there's like a web of potential realities that are coming off us. And when we become very, very focused and we become mature, we start to steer a bit. And I think getting to know this lady meant that when I saw the Friendship website, which is an Italian website, just has all the images, apparently from the group that put out the Friendship case, there's just like ideas from the Friendship case. You could use Google Translate to turn it into British, you know, English language. But I found it really weird that I actually knew the person. They probably didn't even know who she was, but I knew her. And she's a very, very strange woman herself, if you see what I mean. She's very, very strange herself. So that means that God knows, really. But I just feel that there's a kind of fabric that we're dealing with. So we want to get through into the next age, in my opinion. That's what I want to do, collectively. Get through to the next stage where we meet the higher intelligences, we get a new industrial revolution, a new way of being, where we're like, the toil is taken off our shoulders. So we live in an age where we're limited. Like we're all just like yourself and me, Chris, we talk about how busy we are. We don't have time to enjoy and take in things because this sort of industrial digital age means you have no time. That's what you don't have. And, you know, when we go to this next level, so I start picking out figures now. If I start going towards, this is how peculiar it is again. This is a garden picture. And this is a manifestation of an alien entity. And it's actually got its hands up doing that, which is basically taking the mic. And it's that line there doesn't, you know, it's part of it. And it doesn't belong in the garden. So it's such a strange image. Now, again, it's manifesting into our reality. That is a humanoid of some kind coming in and being taking the mic. There's like the cosmic trickster, which is another archetype from the ancient world. This idea of a trickster that comes along. He's like a Pan type figure. So in the past, people would have probably built a shrine to Pan if they saw something like that or given an image. But he's very cheeky. And he just appeared on a photograph. So it's like the presence of an entity.
That's now, I believe you mentioned this earlier, that people who have these experiences and contact, before they take these pictures, they often have a feeling like they should take a picture or that something is there. Is that often the case you've come across?
They're in a situation where they are intersecting with these people, whoever they are, these intelligences, and they're driven to go and look or can take a camera out. They're driven to walk out. Now, I was there when this picture was taken into what was empty space, and it's sort of a helmeted figure. I'll see if I've got a better image of it. I'm not sure if I have, but I did try. Oh, there we go. I've made a brighter version of it. Let me get it up there. There we go. It's a helmeted figure. It's very kind of Lord of the Ringsy, and it's if you look at the 3D kind of glyph-like effects on that, I saw that picture taken. I saw and looked at the screen when it was taken. So it's like one that I'm familiar with. And to me, there's symmetry in it. There's like textures and, yeah, it's possible it's an optical illusion. But for me, it's a very bizarre helmet. And it has light shining on it. And you think, well, what this means is your mind is creating. That was in water vapor and sort of a frosty night. Creating order. And you're manifesting. That isn't, to me, a very alien picture. It's more of a fairy-type picture. It's more like what you'd expect to see in a fairy kingdom. But it's the detail. If you go in, if I zoom in a little bit, you look at the detail on that helmet. It's like an engraved detail. You look at the surfaces, the light. You know, for me, yeah, it could be an optical illusion, but you get a lot of symmetry in there. Just peculiar. I just think that we
might... Yeah, you can even see what looks like eyes.
Yeah, cheekbones, chin strap. I mean, it's just a bizarre thing to happen. I think the more you become closer to this reality intersection, you know, the more manifestation there is. And we've got to evolve into it so we can go all the way through. So I'll go to this picture now, which is where I'm getting into the hardware. So this mere looking object has a figure looking out a window. It has strange illumination.
And what this I believe, was, this is a ship in the sky, right?
Yeah, it's just a month old. It's a picture taken at night. It's actually from a film. And the entity's looking out in the morning, something like that. And he's got an automatic camera running. And he's looking out. And he lets you know that he's watching you. You're looking at him. He's a figure, you know, a man. And this is the secret to this, that we are manifested into human form. A lot of these things are. They look like us. But they're so different to us. But they can take our appearance. They probably are our appearance. They may be some relative of ours. Because we don't understand our lineage. You know, we understand evolution. We understand that there's primates and there's humans, that there's an evolutionary path. But what we don't know is what else has been here. We don't. People assume that we're unique, that humans come from a certain straight line of evolution. Well, what happens about the other ones? We're now learning there are other hominids. So there's these Denisovians, there's all these different strange, different branches. What happens to them? You know, where did they go? Did they evolve out? Did we, you know, have more than one brother or sister type human? My view is none of which we know, and we assume we know that we're just unique, we're the only survivors of that evolutionary path, and you've got the Homo sapiens. But my view is maybe not. Maybe we've got other humans here that we know nothing about, and that's where I'd stand on it.
Right. Now, one of the interesting things I find about this picture is all the accounts of that people have seen beings looking out of windows of crafts. They often describe the beings, gray-looking beings with large heads and form-fitting outfits, and that's exactly what this looks like, a large head, and he has a black form-fitting outfit on.
The hybrid, I mean, this is the thing, the whole hybrid question, which is another show, is that we're looking at versions of our own skin. So people who've seen hybrids suggest they've got human skin. They've got non-human anatomy in terms of skulls and things like that, but they have our skin. So again, you know, you're looking at genetic manipulation, you're looking at grafting of species maybe. Again, we're not asking the questions that would make, you know, if you were trying to create a hybrid, how would you do it? Well, you'd take traits, you'd take maybe a skin from a particular type of human, and then you'd mix it with a skull of another type of being altogether. We're not at that stage yet, but we've got to sort of think forward and think, well, these people seem to be able to construct a genetic lineage from other parts. That's what I think we're seeing. Because we say, well, it couldn't happen, that's the end of the debate. So what about if there are, like, so many different versions of traits, you know? That's what I think it is. They've just taken a genetic line from three or four different human type beings or three, you know, different creatures, they've matched them up. And then, you know, they're going to be traveling in this motorway sort of effect, which is that dimension intersection that's going on. And we're seeing all sorts of different results from that. It's like a common technology to mix lineages. Everyone's description of going on board craft, when they see humans sort of being grown in tanks, they're looking at body parts in tanks. This is probably just a generic, straightforward thing. They're growing replacement body parts. They're growing new entities. Because we haven't reached that stage yet, but we're not far off, we still sort of think of it as fantasy. For me, it's just, oh, it's the, you know, 100 years ahead. Was it 1,000 years ahead? Probably tens of thousands in my view. And they're almost certainly creating life. And, you know, when you get to that stage, imagine the responsibility that means. So I'll show you a sequence of pictures from that craft, and it actually appears vertical. So there it is again. I'll see if I can blow it up. That's the craft, and it's now vertical on its side, and it's viewing the camera on its side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's bizarre pictures, but I don't really care if people think that's real or not. There's also discs appearing with it. If I can blow that up. There are other discs which seem to be stuck to the sides of the craft and seem to be able to disengage. So this is something I haven't seen or heard of before, which is a craft carrying multiple discs stuck to it. So it's like a mother craft. Again, you're looking at a glass sort of roof and a dome, and then you've got like three layers of floors. I'm not, you know, saying anything other than take a look. Little video here, I think we'll try that. Just, it's got that, yeah, just stills. It's not, it's an image series of stills. So there's a figure there. If I freeze that, there's a figure looking out. So on the humanoid. That one is wearing white, and it's looking the other way. There's probably a second figure in a hood there, as far as I can tell. There's two figures there. One's wearing a hood. One's sort of standing with their back. Maybe a third there. I mean, I'm not saying it is, but it's, you know, we've got to look at it like they would in the Second World War. You know, they'd be looking at images, analysing them. You know, that's got technology. If I move it a little bit on, that's got technology there. That's like a set of functioning doors and partitions, and we're not able to make out what it is. But I think that strange thing there, there's a number of them on the craft, are docking, some sort of docking points, which really makes them very physical, doesn't it, if they need docking.
Man, this is some of the most clear, compelling pictures I've seen.
Which is bizarre. Amazing. Yeah, and my view is we can use them as tools. So that's where we're going with it. Use it as tools. If we can conceive, there is again, what that's like. So you get these very strange images and very vivid colours. But it was on its side. You start to see the structure. See, again, that's a docking point for me. I'm not saying it is. That's what you've got to rationalize. You've got to sort of come up with, well, what could that possibly be? And then again, the top of the dome. But it, my view is, if you were hoaxing, why didn't you make some really good pictures? I mean, some of these are blurry. Some of them are really, and that's the way I go with these. You know, all I'm saying is there's a structure, there's a glass dome, there's a floor, there's going to be another floor underneath.
Yeah, if these are fakes, they're very, very well done and thought out fakes. And I, you know,
it's very bizarre. So if I go to other images, if I go to this, these are stills, but they show the being at the window. This is what we're looking at. There's a being there, and we actually get a zoom on him. I'll just get it to there. There's a being looking out on a very strange craft. I mean, it's odd. It looks metallic.
It looks like a mantis being of some sort.
That one there, exactly. If I go to actually a still, which may or may not be from, this is a hybrid looking out, that one. That's the same set of images. Look at the face and the kind of shape of the head. You see, like, you know, and also it's what I believe is happening here. We're looking either a ripple effect of light because there's a big gravity field, which is one way, or we're looking at the metal itself becoming transparent gradually, and it turns into glass, because the UFO hulls can become opaque and then translucent and then transparent. So there's an entity now that's quite female to me, and it's sort of looking like that, just curiously out the window. I think there's something in that. You know, that's a being, we're getting to know them, we're getting to, that'd be a hybrid to me. Don't know, I'm not an expert, you know, in terms of what went on. This lovely picture, I've always loved this one. When you get it up. Now, this is the classic landing UFO, and there's a figure at the window. He's one of the intriguing. Now, he's got, like, nice black hair. He's got a clinging suit, and he's looking out that window there. You can see a series of glass sort of panes. Again, the metal's probably becoming opaque. I'd be very surprised if there's any glass in there. And then you see a close-up, which isn't brilliant, but we'll give it a go. The figure at the window, he's not brilliant, but there he is looking out. And maybe a second figure there. So I believe they do this. Looking out is their way of saying, we can see you. We're looking at you. We acknowledge you. This is where we get into the psychology of it, the parapsychology and the psychic. They're all sort of similar. You want them to be getting into us to make us change, but without imposing into us. So we're going to have to learn it all ourselves, which is meiotics, giving birth to knowledge. So let's see where I'm going with this. Trying to think where I'll go next. There's probably, we'll go with these. Now this is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The greys are, those pictures are amazing.
A bizarre picture. I'm trying to see where there should be another one. He's going there. Now, what I see this as, if I go on this one that I like using, I've used it as a front cover on Flying Saucer Review. This is a proper humanoid sort of grey type creature.
Now, you can't get any more clear than that. That's...
Yeah, this is his nasal kind of ridge. He's got his skull bone, and this is allegedly, I mean, it's very difficult. People are skeptical, fine. This is what you, when you're leaving. He's looking at you as you're leaving the craft, and the camera's there.
What's the story behind this? How did this picture get taken?
This was a three-week stay on the craft. Now, again, I'm starting to realize time is not the same for them. So 3 weeks with them could be a day here. It could be half a day.
And they allowed this person to take
this pictures. Yeah, they did, but they also took his memory. I mean, the problem is they give him pictures, but he has very little recall and very little emotional peace. So when you've been on board for that long, they just wipe everything. And this is what I noticed with, because I like to look at old cases. Elizabeth Clara allegedly spent 3 years. She was a South African contactee, British born, went to South Africa. In the 50s, she had a famous set of pictures that were in Flying Saucer Review. She had very little in her book that was strong recollection. It was all kind of vague. So I believe this is where we're going with this. They will wipe you. If you've been on board and you've known the secrets of their life, they're not going to let you take it back. They give you tantalizing images. They give you emotional connections and things, but they're not going to let you know what they're like. We're not allowed to see into this. This is obviously behind the curtain in Wizard of Oz. And, you know, this is now this series of pictures that came with that, which are these. And this is, you know, these are all from 2011, I think. It's this strange figure. Now, a lot of these are video grabs, so I can only say it's digitized. He has, you can see his chin, you can see his skull shape. Probably the same type.
You can see it perfectly.
He may be the same guy. So if you go through, there's a whole series of images. If I take, so some of these are blurred, but they catch the kind of shape of the guy. And the fact that he sort of stood still at the door and got a load of pictures taken. See if I can jump these. If I jump them, yeah, maybe. There's another one of his neck. Again, they're blurry. And this is kind of a living wall made out of tubes behind him. That's all I know. If you look at the light, this is classic UFO light. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not beaming anywhere. It's local. Whatever that is, it's light that's around him. There you can see a better image of it. See how the light's moving through the walls?
Yeah.
These are unique environments that we know nothing about. We are going, you go into a craft, it's maybe organic in places, there may be like living parts to it. If you look at the illumination on him and above his head, and look at his eyes, you know, this is like the classic black-eyed being. And, you know, these are very bizarre. That's the only word I'd use. Now we're going into other beings. This is 2011 as well. This is... Now, this is the key to this. I'm guessing here, but I've got to go with the guess. The Greys had a mother species. That's what I think. And the mother species has individuality and highly intelligent. And then you get the drone-type Greys, which are the form of them without the intellect.
So yeah, that's what I was just about to mention. Some of them seem like biological drones or
these
some kind of...
personality, and that's what I noticed in these pictures. You can almost get to know... Also, that's a different one. I'll come out of that for a second. I'll have to go on it and click them individually. These are not good contrast from some of these, but each of these has a personality. They have very different face shapes, which makes me think... If you look at the eyes, you can actually see the pupil. There. If you look at that, there is a pupil behind the black eye patch, and it's a big pupil. So again, they must be low light.
That's something else I've heard, that those black eyes are just some sort of shield or something.
Visors.
Visors, okay.
You've got a great big eye, which means it's a nocturnal kind of, you know, eye. That's a haunting eye for me, and there's a number of them that have it. That I come out of that. These are a series of pictures. Each one of these entities is different. Again, you can be skeptical. That's human skin. One of the things we looked at was, that, you know, as a debate, was, is that human skin? Is that a alien entity with the same skin as us? And if you look at the eye again, there's a big eye there, and it's... Let's see if I can zoom around on that. I mean, it kind of gets a bit spooky when you go into the eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
Images, but you can see that that's a different face. That, to me, is a young one, and there's old ones and young ones. So you get the more decrepit-looking ones. But I think it's another young one, so I'll see what it is. Yeah, that's a young one. What can I say? It's a different being, but there are some older ones there. Check that one. So that's like middle-aged, I'm guessing. I'm not saying the eyes are a lot blacker. Again, you can see the big pupil behind. Let's see what we can get out of this. I mean, it's low contrast, so you get... Oh, there we go. That, for me, is the black pool. So people say, when you look into the eyes of one of these creatures, you're mesmerised. Not only because they're very psychic. We've got to talk about what these things are. They can overtake our minds and put anything they want in there. And when we talk about our status as contacted beings, they can control absolutely anything that happens to us. So, you know, we are, again, people are just dismissive and they don't seem to get it how vulnerable we are to the will of these things. They are completely evolved beyond us, you know. We don't have choices when dealing with these things. We can only rely on their goodwill because they can overtake our minds. That, again, looks like a young one. I think one of my favorite ones I missed, there's one in there that I should have put that I've missed. It's a female-looking one. And, again, that's, you know, you can see these different entities. People can be skeptical. I'm fine with it. These are tools.
Now, do you find that with the grays that there is a hierarchy of entities above them that's usually calling the shots other than these grays? Or do you find that there are actual, I guess, a higher level of grays that are in control of some of these contact visitations or experiments?
I'm sure we're looking at huge numbers of drones who are pretty much limited to what they can do and what they can experience. And then you've got this older sort of differentiated beings, which are the real, I think they could be the master race up there. And I mean that. They could be calling the shots. So I had a very strange article given to me, which was something that meant a lot to me. And it was about the idea that all the sort of beings that are like us, these beings trapped on planets with a certain level of development, are held by a policing race of beings, like this, what I may have even been the pictures that I've shown you. And they are almost genetically or in some way dependent on us, so they have to have us, but they won't allow us to evolve out. And in the article, the concept was that once we become aware of that, we have to renegotiate our existence. So when we break out of here, on the point where we're able to talk to them, we may be talking to beings that have policed us for a bloody long time. And we would have to persuade them that they need our distinctiveness, if you use the old Borg phrase, the distinctiveness of the human, to be an advantage. And we'd have to evolve ourselves so we're not looking for to go into wars with them. But these, I've got that. That was an interesting article to me. It would make logical sense, perhaps, that we were much more space capable than we think. And we may have had a lost part of our history where we got condemned to living a primitive existence. I mean, I'd probably go with that, looking at the ancient cutting marks on stone, which is in Egypt and Peru and various countries, that this advanced civilization that could cut through granite maybe had a space age heritage of some kind, or some sort of interdimensional heritage, became confined, and we are sort of at the mercy of each other ever since, that we've never been able to organize ourselves to get off this planet, if you like. So that's where I'd stand on it, really, from just logic. I don't know, but I have a strong sense that we are actually very much conditioned to be here. But then we mustn't react with negativity, because it was events that happened that we don't know about. And we can't just sit there and be victimized and say, oh, we can't get off, we can't escape, you know, we're trapped, they're too intelligent, they won't let us go. We have to then evolve relationships despite what's happened, despite the history and despite human history. That's where I stand on it.
It's possible that if they do have any intent for us, that they would want us to evolve ourselves, being, yeah, if they are benevolent, you know, that is.
I think they're amoral. I take the view that all alien morality is amoral, which means they don't have a positive or a negative view. They just have an outcome view. I mean, that's just my opinion from what I've read. And all, I've read an awful lot of contact cases, and they don't intervene. often. They don't try and save people. We'd like them to be like that because that's a human value system. But to them, I think they're dispassionate and scientific and disinterested in what obsesses us may disinterest them. So our protection and mothering and, you know, like what we look for in religion, protected in some way, and that we have a divine providence. I'm not sure what they think of us, but I doubt that, you know, I take that view still. I like that view that inside every human being there's a divine state of being, and that we are actually not flawed at all. We're actually something absolutely brilliant, but we're not able to manifest it yet. We're sort of unaware of what we carry. There's something, you know, what's the word, mighty inside us. That's what I believe. And maybe we're just what the universe needs one day, which is optimistic.
I agree with you. I agree 1,000%.
Yeah. So I believe in the higher self and the manifestation of like spirit and the soul energy and the self-realized human. That's what this is about. So we could go off and be very clever and do all sorts of strange things. But at the end of it, it's, we're, you know, what's the word, rediscovering what we are and being, you know, the amazing creatures that we might be. That's what I'm after. I mean, that's my game plan. So I'll show you some more images. These are a bit more challenging. That image is one that interests me. I'll see if I can blow it up. I'm not sure what size it's going to come up. Oh, it's gone very small, that one. That's an entity made out of light, or as it passes from one dimension into another. So that's on board a craft. Again, people can be skeptical. I'm fine with it. That's what I was seeing in 96. Was
this entity from the same individual that was in the other craft?
This is from 2012, January 2012, or late December 2011. So these are pictures of the space on board a craft and something coming out, and actually became a human. That thing became a human. But at the time when they took that picture, it was made out of light. So you imagine a high-dimensional, intersectional dimensional device that's moving around, it lands, they start to get out, and then they form up into what we call solid matter as they come out, which I like the idea of. So they go from a higher dimensional space into ours and they suddenly become solid. Now, you know, I know an awful lot about what went on then. It took me many years to work out what happened. And they were a man and a woman that came off that, and they spoke very eloquently, and they knew everything about the people they came out to speak to, and they've been a number of times since. But these are the representatives of a civilization, of which there are many, that are aware of us, and we're, you know, if we play our cards right. So there's a recent debate about what's going to be released by the Pentagon. And I'm a huge skeptic on that. I'm a skeptic because we have to achieve it ourselves. We don't get given these answers. We have to evolve that. We're not going to get given, oh, by the way, there's aliens. That's not going to happen for us. That's my view. Other people may or may not believe what's going to come. I believe everything we achieve off our own backs, everything. None of this is coming to us as a gift. And, oh, by the way, now it's time for meeting the next age. You know, it's not going to happen. We have to win every inch of ground. So that figure to me represents what I was seeing, which is people made out of light, sort of blue light, and they're people, and they just manifested in this case into a man and a woman, which was very touching. Here's a beautiful picture. I like some of these because it is the onboard encounter, and this is like the entity looking down and a person walking up. Now, for me, that is like, again, the deep psychology of contact. You're in an alien environment. They're looking at you. You're looking at them.
Looks like they're at some kind of large control panel or desk or something.
It's completely bizarre. And all the images look great. They look weird. I've seen the friendship case onboard images, which are bizarre, and they look weird. And this is no different. They're not going to give us everything. You're going to get a degree of image that tells you some stuff, but I think what it's meant to do is get you in here in your solar plexus. It's meant to shift you. Because so if we could all do this, if we could all just get on board and have encounters and go out into, you know, deep space and travel through dimensions and things, that's where we'd like to be. We've been trained by television since we were kids. I'm sure you watched loads of sci-fi when you were a kid. I did. And I'm ready, you know, to do this. But, you know, we have to earn it. We don't get it for free. We don't get this, you know, it's how where we are. We have to just take it. So for me, it's the psychic side of this, that's the domain. They've looked at you, they've engaged with you, and the people said involved with this, they then went home and had a cup of tea. Because you come back to this world, and it's tea, and it's going to bed. And it's, you don't get, like, the, you know, the, you get some of that, and then you have to come back here. And that's, like, for me, we've got to solve our existence here, unfortunately. These are more images. That person's hardening up. This is what I think of, we're seeing. That's the same man. He's now gone from light into a skeleton, and he's becoming solid as he walks out. And this is representative for me as he comes out of another dimension that's higher order space. The higher order space to me is like, you think of a rose window. I've got an article I'm trying to do in the FSR of someone being pulled through a ceiling through what looks like a mosaic of like a rose window or a harmonic kind of shape. And they're pulled through the center of it. And I think what they were shown was what higher order space looks like. It looks like a snowflake or some kind of really complex mosaic as you go in there, because the space has some sort of geometric, multi-surface, multi-dimensional qualities that I can't describe because I'm not from there. But I think that you're going into a higher order of space with different rules, different physics. And we're beyond our comprehension, is a good term, I think.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. A lot of cases and people I've interviewed said when they're taken on a craft, the craft may look enormous, but when they get inside, it's like they're in an even larger space than the craft appeared. It's like they're in a different time, space, or dimension.
This is it. We're dealing with beyond our physics, so we don't even understand the concept. I mean, that is, you know, a photograph of a man. And look, he looks like a blooming match, almost. But he's filling out, and he will manifest into something solid. That's what he is. So, you know, he's come from a higher order space. I've got a lot of spaceship pictures I was trying to talk to you about last time as they come through. You know, that's what, it just interests me. You know, there he is again. That was in his initial shape. So he comes through, he's made out of smoke and light, then he becomes a solid black shadow. And then you don't see, because deliberately you're not going to see, because we're not allowed to see, metallic kind of suits, jumpsuits, and people talking. You're not going to see that at the moment. So that's, yeah, this for me is like 2001 A Space Odyssey. You know, it's, these are subliminal images. I like it that they're, you know, you can see his neck now. He's got a shoulder. He's growing into something, you know, he's becoming whole, you know. And then you get to see kind of weird pictures, which I will show you. There's one again, a half-manifested man, but he's got a jaw. He's a hybrid, this guy. I think I showed it to you last time. He's got a maxilla. He's got a frontal bone. Some sort of, that was taken. The person could hear him. They took the picture. They couldn't see him. I think that's an entity. He's been double exposed for some reason, probably to do with how he, you know, the space is. So what you're realizing, what I'm trying to realize in this, is that there is another form of being. I love this one. These again are like 2001. That's him walking out. And it looks like hell, doesn't it? It looks like Hades. Because you're seeing the heat or the light. It looks like a furnace. I mean, this is like, you know, the Event Horizon film. Do you remember the Event Horizon? Do you remember that sci-fi? And they've got like a black hole inside a craft, which is just fire. To me, if you saw that, would you walk on board that? You'd be a bit scared. But that's what we're dealing with.
That is terrifying.
It is really, because it's like, it looks like a furnace, but it isn't. It's not hot. So what you get to is, if we come out of that, I find some more pictures. Let's see if I didn't know what that one is. There's some crack at that one. They're all sort of similar. Oh, that's not going to work. It's just a figure. Just going to see what we've got. We've definitely got the ones that relate to that. Let's try and see. Oh, this is a nice one. This is subliminal. I blow it up. just a figure in a chair. There's his feet and his hands and his head. Now, it's a bizarre picture. That is an alien hybrid. He's a little person. We're not allowed to see exactly, you know, but you can see his little legs and feet, see his arms, see his head. He's a hybrid. He's what you mix a human with some alien DNA, you get something. I mean, it sounds crazy what that conversation, listening to myself talk, and I'm thinking, this is mad. This is a picture I liked. I'm not sure if this one came out right. Let's have a look at it. This is the act of going on. Again, you can say, it's all hoaxed. It's all balls. You know, it doesn't matter. But what I like about it is the smoke is rainbow coloured, that mist. He's walking on board. You can see his reflection of his face in the back of that, whatever that monitor type thing is. He's walking in, and there's his reflection, which is very good, whoever did it. If it was, I don't think it is. I think it's real, but I think it's limited as well. There's an entity looking across as you step on board, and you're sort of merging into the mist. So for me, because these things emit microwaves, this is my theory, you get mist every single time because they evaporate the water. As they come down, they're going to boil the water in the ground. That's why you get these sort of micro spheres of like heat damage to the soil. You get crystallization of the soil, which is very similar to high pressure heating that you get in strata of rock strata underground under pressure. You get these very strange effects. You get dehydration of the soil. So he's, you know, that mist for me is just water vapor coming from underneath where it's contacted the ground. But I like the picture. It hits me in the gut. It's like it's telling me you're entering into, you're with him. You're entering into this other domain where all the secrets and knowledge are. But again, they'll wipe you once you've been in there. They're not going to tell you everything. You don't get to find out. I like these. I mean, this is the hovering furniture side of things. Again, this is deliberately, they're very shadowy. They're not going to tell you everything in these pictures.
This is one of my favorites here. I love this.
It's the hovering furniture. That's actually levitating furniture. Again, you see a reflection in the glass there of some kind, I think. You're looking at, you know, there's other images from this series. I just threw
it. It's like a little guy sitting in a chair in the background, too.
Yeah, he is. I think there's other pictures I haven't included, so on another occasion we'll go through more pictures, see what we've got. I don't, like I say, what can I say? It all looks mad to me. It's all completely insane. There's better contrast images, but you see it's floating. The floor is shiny, and it's floating furniture.
This is from an individual that has also done my craft.
Yeah. If you look at, I mean, it looks kind of, you know, there's always ways of denying it. And I accept it's insane. I mean, that's a reflection there, I think, on the floor. The floor is, you know, very bizarre. So you've got anything a bit more, it's what someone's put through a filter to make it black and white, I think. There's, and it's a bit sharper. And again, it looks like toys to me. It could make that with a model kit. It's got like a little booth there. You've got a figure sitting in a chair, kind of Buddha-like. You've got panels. There's no dust and no dirt. And you've got illuminated walls. I mean, we're going to have to get used to this concept. Of course it looks like a load of loony stuff.
Yeah, now, again, for everyone just tuning in, you know, there's no way to prove that these pictures are 100% real. But they are some of the most compelling evidence that I have seen for the phenomenon. And if they're faked, like I said earlier, they are extremely well faked and thought out to where they would look like they wouldn't be, you know, extremely real. It's amazing.
We have to conceive. What was my message? One was that you bring people together and form groups for contact. Can't really do it on your own. If you look at the friendship case, it was a small group of people together. If you look at George Adamski's first encounter in Desert Center, it was about seven people together. You're better off if you were interested in trying to get close, but that's initial work, and you have to have a stable group mind, and you've got to have the people who are more advanced in their thinking. You can't just have... And what I believe is advanced thinking has got nothing to do with education. And it's got nothing to do with whether you're a good or a bad person, per se. There's very simplistic views people got that. I'm a good person, so therefore I can have contact. Good doesn't come into it. What it means is you connect and you go forward with what happens and you just move with it. That's what they want. I'm sure of it. You can't just go in and then try and push it the way you want. I think I want it this way, because they'll just run. So to be, in my view, connected to these encounters, you've just got to go with whatever they send to you, whatever you encounter, you just go with it. That's what I mean by advanced maturity, because you're not trying to impose into it. You probably notice I try not to say too much about, other than what I think's going on, I don't say what's right or wrong, because I don't know. I don't know much. But that for me is android type being. This is the other side of intelligence. It's some kind of android. So it's a functioning, walking creature. Lost contact. Be back. Hello?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, let me make sure we're still streaming. Yeah, we're good. We're good to go.
Okay, let's see what else we've got. I like this one. So I'll get that one up. Now, what I like is distortion. Obviously, he hasn't got arms that long, but it's the idea of just watching a being sort of making its way towards you on board a craft. There seems to be a lot of crystalline light in these. And I would say the light itself has structure in higher realities. Very bizarre, but I like it. Again, very deep subliminal image. Can you see that image? Yeah, you can see it?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's good. So for me, I think most of these images hit me in the gut. They make me feel like I'm there to a degree.
And some are wondering, you know, in the chat, why all the pictures are so extremely blurry. Well, you have to think, if you're in an extra-dimensional or interdimensional space or somewhere where time-space is different, or, I mean, even the fact that you're being allowed to take a picture, you know, I'm sure that there are circumstances that are causing these pictures to appear the way they are.
Don't see the detail. I think my view is we go with what we've got generally in ufology. I'm somebody who looks through images all over the world. I look through contact cases. They're giving us what they can feel we can handle. So I think you don't want the verification image yet. They don't want it because we're not ready to handle it. I think this stuff is, you can throw it away. You can say, that's a load of crap. And it's fine because that's not what it's about. It's about conceiving the next level. My view is the tools of this are imagining what would I do in that situation? How would I engineer that situation to happen? How would I develop a relationship with a group of beings on a craft so I could meet them? That's the bit that matters. Now, if you haven't even got that, where you don't believe entities exist and you don't believe craft exists, that's fine. Because you don't matter. It doesn't matter. If it doesn't exist for you, it doesn't exist. But when people have had their first good UFO encounter and they know they're real, then you have to take it to the next step. What am I going to do with it? Now, the vast majority of people drop it. Most people will drop it and never go after them. They will say, wow, that was amazing. I'll always remember it, but that's it. There's a small group of people, a bit like close encounters of their kind, who go off and then try and create the bridge to these people. And I was one of those, and I met people who were like that. And I'm assuming that you know, whenever I go to UFO conferences, wherever I go, I'm going to meet those people who are going to continue looking. And then what I'm saying is use Darwin, use behaviorism. Whatever they respond with that's strong, you follow. And you evolve into their space. You want to be near them or experience them. You've got to watch what they do, and then you change your strategy to get more of it. So if you get a closer up UFO encounter, they're obviously experiencing it, but you're doing well. If you get no encounters, you've got to go back and restructure and reform. Because we don't know what higher dimensional beings want. We can only sort of surmise and guess. So that's where I'm standing with it, is that, you know, everything we get is for a reason. None of it is random. I'm not even sure what I've got some of these. I'll just keep going. It's the last few, I think. Now, that one is just a blurry shot, more blurries. There's an entity there sort of looking up. God knows what it's doing. There are other images that I haven't put in, probably because I was had about half an hour to grab them and put them up, and I don't think I had enough time to get the rest of them.
Oh, that's okay. We can do another show later. This is great.
Oh, that's it. What I'm really getting at for people is conceive. Conceive it. Don't go with sci-fi. Don't go with popular fiction or mythology. Read cases. Talk to people who've had encounters. or look for well-written cases. And there's, you know, numbers of books over the years where people had encounters, and read what actually happened and get into the case evidence. That's what I stand on. Get into the case evidence and then, you know, realize that someone else isn't going to do it for you. They're not going to do it for you. You've got to do it for yourself. You've got to have this, give birth to knowledge yourself. But we can work together and we can cooperate and we can agree that we don't agree. You know, we can, I believe if we could create a respect culture, it would mean that it doesn't matter if it's, you know, don't like it, great, fine. I mean, I don't need anyone to do anything. It's just, but we should be talking and we should be building structures of how we treat this material. And so we'll start thinking from an alien perspective. What are they, you know, what would they do in a situation where everyone's got their own idea and everyone's got their own plan, what they think should happen? Imagine tomorrow, like say we had a bridge where we could go and meet these things. Don't you think everyone would want something different? And wouldn't this be terrifying to the beings? So all these humans coming and they say, well, I want this and I want that. And no, I'm the one you should listen to. No, don't listen to him. That's where we're at in our evolution. Weird thing is, I got into watching Russian sci-fi, old Russian sci-fi. Do you know what the weirdest thing is? The communists had it right, that the scientists would look at each other and all work together and cooperate. And that's what's weird, because I'm not a communist and I definitely don't support communism. But somehow they understood that all these people who were involved in knowledge would have an innate knowledge of working together, which I only see in sci-fi from the Soviet Union, weirdly. And you think, imagine if we did work together and just say, well, I don't agree with that, well, that's wrong, but I'll still go along with, like, you know, we have, once we hit that point where we're going to be able to have that first bridge, we've got to know what we're there for. And we want to be, like, grouped together to say, we could collectively, we are organized and not lunatics. I'm going to say it. You know, you look at what's happened in riots. Humans are lunatics. Anyone looking from outside, these people are mad because they destroy things in the name of progress. They smash things. And don't you think it's going to be any different when an entity appears who's got, like, amazing knowledge on medicine, amazing knowledge on genes, that they can cure illnesses, they can solve the energy crisis, they can, you know, totally enable humanity. Don't you think these lunatics that are here, we'd better bloody change? And I don't mean that we all go off now and wear robes and become cults or anything. I mean that we start learning to work together, even if we don't agree. So I would work with a communist. I would work with, you know, anybody, because my view is it doesn't matter what their viewpoint is. It's the end result. That's my summary. I always come up with a summary. That, you know, I don't care what your viewpoint is, as long as you're willing to work. And we learn to cooperate despite our differences. And like I say, you know, there's countries all over the world I don't see eye to eye with. I do have issues with China. I'm going to be honest. I'm bloody terrified of what China's turning into. And I wanted to work with them 2 years ago. I was dedicated to thinking we can work with the Chinese. But then you look at them and you think, they can't cooperate. They don't have a concept for it now. And this is a Chinese Zoom. It's a Chinese platform. And they're probably going to watch this. And I'm thinking, how on earth do you cooperate when you've got no concept of it? And then what? Look at the aliens looking at us. And they're saying, well, presumably, how do these guys work together? How are they going to work together? They're completely insane as a human race because they all want something different. We've got to have some elements of collectivism, in my view. So I'm not economically in favor of it. I'm totally a conservative. And free market and competition. But I believe there has to be, in this strange alien concept, is that we have to bury our differences, even if we bloody hate each other. We've got to bury our differences. And make progress. I'm not sure where you stand on it. Well, it's a soapbox finished. I'm not sure where you stand on that, but I was in the message at the end. And I think even if we bloody hate each other, we've got to work together.
I agree 100%. That's the only way that we're going to move forward, is if we all come together and work together.
cooperate, but we have to know what we are, and we are bloody dangerous. That's where I stand. And the day we get close to one of those craft and we get beings like that, we're extremely dangerous. And I say it, dangerous we are. And it doesn't matter. We've got to get to this point where we can collaborate where it counts. That's my end of my spiel for today. I hope you liked it.
Yeah, definitely. A good note to end on. And something else I want to talk about before you head out. The world we live in right now it's terrifying, but they have a lot of promising prospects that are coming up right now, especially when it comes to the field of ufology. We have the mainstream media showing these videos of, you know, released footage of what they are calling real unknown craft. We're having a lot more people kind of becoming interested and actually waking up to this and giving it the possibility that this phenomenon, there could be something to this. I see a lot of people that have never watched my show tuning in, asking me questions, people in my own family kind of coming around to that there could be something to this phenomenon. Do you think that within our lifetime we may have actual more of an understanding, but not only that it's just common knowledge that this phenomenon is real, these entities do exist, they do contact us, and they are a very big part of our reality. They more than we could ever understand. Do you think that we'll see that anytime in our lifetime?
I think we have to create the entirety of it. That's what I believe. And I'm very Protestant in my outlook. I'm a hybrid. So for me, that you work to create redemption. That's what I believe. And if you don't work, you actually cheat yourself. So every single thing that we'll gain, we can do the whole lot, but it will be people working. And I've met some great people over the years in ufology. So I know the material's there, but I've also met destructive people. And we've got to try and tame that part of ourselves. You know, it's that those out and what it would mean to be on yourself to them. What would it mean? So we've all got intolerances and dislike, and yet we've got to evolve into something that's where we can actually get the. We can be dealt with. So I think we can do it, but it would all. I think our work ethic is the key. I'm convinced that it will take us a really great superhuman work ethic. It's going to bring us to this. So you work really hard, which is interesting, Chris. You're one of those people who puts out a lot of material. You've got great platform developing, and you're doing it. You know, you're one of these people. You're bringing people together from all over the world, and I think. Calming effect, because we don't want hysteria, we don't want factions. I just want people conferences that we, which I saw actually when I was in Loughlin. I really like Loughlin. Give each other goodwill. Wow, that was amazing. I just went and met people, and it was goodwill. And I remember you giving off a lot of goodwill, but it was other people there, and I felt like a homecoming.
And I think I felt the same thing. Yes.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, I love anyone who wants to go to a great conference. Loughlin is the time of the year because of, you know, there was sure there'll be another one. And it's an amazing event, you know, for me, because I realized that how many learn that there are vast numbers of good people and there's a huge resource there. And we've got to create something. I'd love to be able to say that. What I want is these big jumps, you see. I mean, what hurts me is the slowness of it, because of maybe that's the thing I want to change. So I'm a sort of radical. You probably guess I am a radical, even though I'm a respectable person. I want to jump a lot of years in one lifetime to a new civilization. And I'm going to dare say it's going to come from being extremely crafty and sneaky and making things happen. But then the consequences are the issue that also weighs me down, thinking, oh God, because that means we won't have evolved. So we're going to get all the toys and not have evolved, which is the... I think that's where we're at. I think we have to be almost a virus of evolution in our society, where, because I don't want to destroy things. I don't want to look for enemies. I don't want to spend my life in conflict. That's not going to help. I want to put my resources with other people into making these weird creatures, whoever the hell they are, into having a direct relationship. And, you know, I talk differently to other researchers. I realize I'm a bit different. I'm a bit of an unknown quantity. And you've been really helpful because you've given me a lot of platform there. And like I say, it's really nice just to say what I believe. I don't know how the hell this has come across, but it's pretty, I'm bloody radical. And you're going to have to get used to that. That's what comes with action. You've got to have action. Theory is great. We've got great theoretical people, but you've got to have an edge.
Right. Sometimes people need to have some stuff thrown in their face sometimes.
Yeah, I think so. So what I've shown is it's not really like a reflection on me. It's just stuff. But my intention is to do the work. So I'm not even worried if I never appear again on anything. It's the work. The work is why we're here. That's why we're born, is to leave something worthwhile. It's a big change. That's where I stand on it. So I'm not, the aim is not to get everyone to believe in this or to advocate for it or to even be nice. It's just to get where we need to go, which is to be out there living a much bigger scale with bloody limits that we've got on us lifted. But then we have to evolve without blowing ourselves up in that immediate time. Which is, you're gonna laugh because that's where we're going. But if the Russians did some very good apocalyptic films, so I've got to say, I have to admire the Russian output of filmmaking. They really understood Armageddon.
I'm gonna have to check out some Russian films there.
It's a bit slow. What they do is, I find you put them to music, so you take the visuals and put them to music, and they're great. The actual films are very plodding and very somber. You put the visuals, they're better than any music video I've ever seen. I mean, I'd love to do a show where we just talk about some great sci-fi images from the old Soviet Union. But I think they're brilliant. I mean, I love what they did. Because I think they imagined a scientific world with no distractions, and science was just the goal, nothing else. I think that's an amazing idea, that we just advance ourselves. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your background is. We're just here to discover and to extend ourselves. You know, that would be my message. But the problem is, we fight, it's human competition. We're going to fight for every single atom of this thing that we've got. Like, this is the Holy Grail. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. I think we're coming to the end. But, this is the Holy Grail we're fighting for. It's the end of, not knowing. You're going into a new state of being, where we become wise to what our true story is, what these universe is. I mean, we're seeing a tiny speck of time, tiny speck of space on this earth. We want to be out there. I mean, I'm sure you do. You must be itching to get out there.
Oh, yes. 100%. Yeah, definitely.
And I've got to be a crazy explorer. I don't want to be exploring from down here looking up. I want to be on those things, going places, and being human, just making mistakes, being an idiot and doing all the things that make us great. That's what I want,
Yeah, I think that's a perfect note to end on. Harry, that was amazing. Always fascinating. The evidence is so compelling. And, of course, we'll have to have you back on sometime in the near future.
Well, hopefully there's lots of subjects we can do. And there's lots more material, so we can hit lots of things. But it's good. I've enjoyed your platform. Great platform. I'll be watching more. Thanks very much. See you all.
Right. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.